take care of that.
Thank you. As you gather, this, I don't know if you heard that, but this conference call is being recorded. So, anyway, if we are unable to answer your questions, we would appreciate it if you could follow up in an email to Barbara Rudolph with any questions we're not able to get to. And we will then post answers to any of those questions somewhere on the County Health Rankings website so that you all will have access to the same information that we're giving. So, in terms of background, some of you may already know this, and some of you may not, but just so that everybody's on the same level playing field, but it helped for us to, for everybody to understand how this entire program came about. Over 20 years ago, folks in Minnesota with an insurance company, which is the precursor now of United Health Foundation, they began ranking the health of states. So they've been doing this for over 20 years, ranking the health of states on a number of different health outcomes and health determinants. Back in the early 2000s, our colleagues, Dr. Patrick Remington and Dr. David Kindig, knew about this work being done in Minnesota, ranking states, but they started thinking about the fact that a lot of what goes on towards improving health is at the local level, not just at the state level. So they thought, well, why don't we take this model and apply it within Wisconsin and rank the health of counties in Wisconsin? And so that was the origin. What happened there was, though, they developed the beginnings of the model that you saw in the call for proposals. The model sort of evolved over time. But the foundations of the model have stayed the same in that there are policies and programs and things that you can do that affect a wide variety of health factors that in turn drive the health outcomes in communities. And so in Wisconsin and then now nationally, we rank the health of counties on two of those three dimensions. We rank them on their health outcomes and we rank them on their health factors, with the health factors being their predictors of future health. We differ a little from America's Health Rankings in that we provide these two separate ranks. America's Health Rankings rolls both of the health outcomes and factors or determinants, depending what you want to call them, they roll them into one ranking. We have found that in our work with the communities, making the distinction between health outcomes and then the things that you actually can do to affect those health outcomes in terms of factors and determinants, that having those rankings remain separate has been really important for us for communication purposes. And that is the underpinnings of this entire project. It's about informing communities about their health. When we first published these rankings, when we went from doing them in Wisconsin to taking them to a national level, and we published them in all 50 states beginning in 2010, for many counties across the nation, this was the first time they'd actually seen county-level data. Some states are very rich with data and make a lot of data available at the county level, but other states don't. And so this was groundbreaking in providing that data. But the real part of it that was groundbreaking was the wide dissemination of this model and really broadening people's understanding of all the factors that influence health. And we always talk about the county health rankings being as a starting point. There are a small set of indicators that we don't include everything under the sun in the rankings because we want them to be manageable. We want people to be able to understand them. But we always tell communities that these are a starting point, that wherever possible, they should go look to local data sources for additional information. And that they're a starting point for conversations. And more than that now, with the addition of the roadmaps portion of our program, we're really also about helping communities move from the data like that available in the county health rankings into actually acting and taking steps to implement evidence-based policies and programs to improve health. So, as I said, key to all of our work is our county health rankings model. Within that model, on our website, there's a lot of information about the measures that we use and why we use them and where the data comes from. We have made a commitment to date to remain reporting the same five health outcomes measures. We are repeating those each year, but each year we've been making some tweaks to measures of the various health factors, whether they be measures of health behaviors, clinical care, social and economic factors or physical environment, you will see, if you look back on our website over the years, you will see that some of the measures have stayed, we've stayed the same over the years, but in other places, we identified new measures where data is available for all states at the county level. We have added them. This is a continual search for us, looking for county level measures. We are always looking for county level measures on which people and communities can actually act. The idea that the measures being to do with modifiable or actionable factors is really important to us, and that is one of the driving factors as to what goes into our rankings. That said, there are areas within the model, and a couple of those were highlighted in the call for proposals, where we struggle. We do struggle to find really adequate measures in the built environment, for example. So modifiable measures are important to us. Obviously, the county is the important unit of analysis. Now, we know that county, in some parts of the nation, counties just aren't as relevant in some places as they are in others, and we acknowledge this. We would love to be able to do this at the city level, for example, but there are just not national data sets available that would allow us to do this. So really, effectively, county is the lowest level that we can do in order to be able to have the coverage across the nation. And actually, even in states where county isn't really used as a form of government, we have still found that there is traction with the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps program, and in large part that's because that the model that we have applies anywhere. It doesn't just apply at the county level. Another sort of characteristic of the rankings is that we have a core set of measures that we use for ranking, but then hopefully you will have seen that on our data set site that we also have a list of a longer set of additional measures that we feel provide additional context to communities. Additional context to communities in doing their work, but we, in terms of the ones that we actually rank on, we try to keep that set as parsimonious as we can. So this call for proposals we've been doing a lot of work here in Wisconsin. In our first year, we did have a metrics advisory group who gave us a lot of useful help, but now as we've been out in the field, we're really looking. For 3 years, we're really looking for others to help us in strengthening our model, helping us fill in the gaps where we have them, and then making use of our data and have interesting applications of our data, and then all towards helping us to strengthen, and then particularly looking at some evaluation. How are the rankings actually being used in communities? We have a lot of anecdotal examples of things, but there have been no systematic studies of how the rankings are being used, and so proposals that address some aspect of that are of particular interest to us. So, is there something else, Bob, I should have said by way of introduction?
I don't think so. I think the only other things that I would touch on are the timelines and some of the logistics of it, and maybe is this a good time to do that?
Why don't you do that?
Yeah. All of you have probably seen the timeline. It's pretty quick turnaround for this next sort of step, and that is November 19th. A brief proposal is due into our offices, and if please email them to me. And the brief proposal form is actually at the back of the call for proposals. You don't have to necessarily use the actual form itself, but if you would use the categories and the way that it's laid out, that would be very helpful for our review team. Next is December 3rd. We will notify all participants of whether or not the proposal was accepted for going forward in terms of the full proposal. All parties will get notification who submit. The full proposals will be due January 7th, and I'll just mention briefly that the full proposals will really be an extension of what you have put in your brief proposal. In other words, kind of fill in the details, provide some additional information, et cetera, having more time to think about it and more time to prepare it as well. And then we will make...
Those proposals, full proposals, will not be lengthy. We're not asking. They will be, definitely will be asking for less than 20 pages, probably closer to 10 pages.
Right.
We're still finalizing those details.
And then after we've had a chance to review the full proposals, we will announce our final selection on February 4th. We have a start date of March 1st for all awards, and that relates to sort of the time period for our funding. So we really need to have those proposals kind of focused on the March 1 date.
And the longest time period for a proposal would be 18 months. Proposals can be submitted for a shorter time period than that, but the longest would be for 18 months.
So I think with that, we did receive some questions from participants, and I'm just going to start with those three and maybe give some quick answers to those. The first one is, can the same applicant submit more than one application? For example, one for $50,000 for a focus project under one of the categories and another for $100,000 for a more expansive project in another category. Yes, you can, but you will be competing against yourself in the sense that all of the proposals are going to be lined up and reviewed under one sort of review criteria. So you're welcome to do that, but again, it is a competitive approach that we will be using.
And we do not have a set number of smaller grants versus larger grants in mind. It's going to depend on the quality of the applications that we receive.
And the next question was, if proposing a new method or way of using the rankings data, can the methods be applied to one specific county as an example, or do they have to be calculated for all counties? I think here how I would respond is that if you actually use only one county, I think it would be very difficult to assess whether the methods work for other counties, particularly since we know there's such wide variation in the population sizes, et cetera, the rural urbanness of the counties. And in order to really have a good sense that this would work for the rankings, we would need to have more than one county. That would not be sufficient. Also, I think just a reminder there that this should not necessarily be a new data element that's developed and not in play. In other words, if you're going to look at making recommendations about other elements to add, the data should be available to us in terms of either in a federal source or some other type of source that would be available for us to implement. The next question was related to the following, whether or not you could address one health factor or all four health factors and the outcomes. And here it's an and or. You can do as many of the health factors as you can reasonably handle and the outcome measures as well. So it just depends on what you want to do and if you have a good rationale for it.
Yeah, there was a lack of clarity in the wording because at one point it says it must have a clearly defined focus on either the outcomes and or one of the four health factors. So what we're clarifying here is that it can address more than one health factor with or without health outcomes as well.
So those are the three questions that we received prior to the call. And I think what we'll do now is open up the call for your questions.
Hi, this is AJ Scheitler from the National Network of State and Local Health Surveys. I have a question about the information that you mentioned that you've already collected in terms of the impact. You mentioned that it was mostly just sort of anecdotal information, but I'm wondering how you even got the information that you have already.
Well, the information that we have already is comes from different sources. And the Robert Johnson Foundation, who funds this whole activity, we both of us sort of separately and together do spend a fair amount of time looking at the media coverage of the rankings, and so we have picked up anecdotes over the years. In the first year of media coverage, a lot of it was just descriptive, saying that the rankings were out, but over time we've noticed that reporters are now starting to dig deeper and actually sort of talk to more people in the community and find out what's being done in response to the rankings. So that's one source that we have gone to. But then we have a lot of sort of word of mouth. When we disseminate the rankings, we started off with this process of working with each state health department. Each state health department identified a point person within the health department who helped us disseminate information to local public health departments. And over the years, that sort of, we call it our state team, has now expanded to include others in many states. And through these contacts, we hear stories about what counties within particular states are doing. And then we are just, between all of us, on the road or up in the air continuously, out and about across the nation, talking with folks about our work. And nearly every time we do that, we, you know, somebody will come up to us and tell us something about how they've used the rankings. So, but we, as I said, we haven't done any formal assessment of it. But that's the kind of nature of how we've been gathering information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Layla Kawadi from RTI International. I have a question related to the focus area 3 that's listed in RT, which is about the impact of the rankings.
Mm-hmm.
And three questions really. One, are the examples listed in RFP, are proposals limited to just those four, or are you open to other examples of impact? Second is, I believe there's a larger evaluation of the roadmaps component of the project that's already underway. And so is there a way to find out more about that to avoid proposing a duplicative effort? And then the last part of the question related to the evaluation impact is, are you looking for breadth of impact or more depth?
Okay, I'll make sure that hopefully I'm going to answer all of your questions. First of all, with respect to, those are just examples listed under there. That's not a restrictive list by any means.
Okay.
In terms of the broader evaluation, there is an evaluation contract with a vendor that initially started off really focusing on just the roadmaps portion of the program. It is currently, there is some discussion right now about expanding some of that evaluation towards issues of awareness of the multiple health factors, so in which case that sort of ties back to the rankings more. The reason, but we are, that is actually a work in progress, and the final set of evaluation questions, well, we don't have a final set of evaluation questions right now. It's a collaborative process between the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the vendor who's conducting the evaluation, and us here at the University of Wisconsin. And that, so I wish that we had the set of questions to be able to tell you, but we don't.
Okay.
And then thirdly, in terms of breadth or depth, I would think that within, I mean, we're not offering that much in the way of funds, and so covering breadth might be, I would think, kind of tricky. That said, depth would be good, but hopefully not just, as was mentioned before, not just in one county. We'd like to go beyond, you know, we'd like to go beyond that if possible.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay.
This is AJ again from UCLA. I just have a quick follow-up to that. What is the timeline on the roadmap evaluation?
That is a 5-year evaluation. The FAT evaluation will be go beyond the length of this particular call for proposals. So, and it's just getting started now, so that's going to be ongoing for a while.
Hi.
This is Lori. Okay.
Yeah, this is Karen Mason from the Louisiana Public Health Institute in New Orleans. I think you may have answered my question already, but we have a lot of interest here in sub-county level, and then so I'm wondering if there's any leeway at all in possibly looking at sub-county data and comparing it to county-level estimates. And just showing how they can vary, because I know our counties are quite diverse.
Yes, and we're absolutely aware of that. I mean, and when you compare county, when you look at counties even within a state, I mean, L.A. County in California has 10 million people versus the smallest county
right.
there, I think it's 150,000 people, and in other states the range aren't those high numbers, but they still range a lot. And yes, absolutely, looking at disparities within counties is definitely an important topic. We are within our project in terms of providing data at the moment are not going to be moving to the sub-county level. That would require us to get a whole other grant from the Robert Johnson Foundation, really, to be able to take on that, and it's a massive undertaking. What we do, though, in recognizing the importance of it, on our website, we have what's called the Data Drill Down Guide, and it's not always easy to find, but if you do a search within our site, you can look for the Data Drill Down Guide. You will find there that what we do is we direct communities towards state-specific data sources. And some of those do have data that allow communities to drill down within the within their counties and look at issues within the counties. In terms of proposal for us and expanding our methodology, if you have ideas for creative ways where we could do this for all, do something for all states. I mean, we'd like to hear them. You'll hear already the skepticism in my voice as to whether or not there is actually something that can be done
yeah.
for all 50 states. So a proposal that would suggest something for just one particular state that we couldn't then generalize to other places would probably, it's not out of the running completely, but it would not, score as well with the reviewers as something that would, be more broadly applicable to other places.
Okay, thank you. That answers it.
This is Lori Stillman from Health Resources in Action. I'm just curious whether the evaluation would set a process evaluation that would look at implementing a new use of the county health rankings model and data, and following that in terms of policy uptake. It would be considered in the realm of, a complex evaluation study. So in other words, the grant itself would not only support the evaluation, but the process of implementing the program.
That's a very good question. But this would be in one specific place. As I think you've heard us say, we are really looking for things that will be applicable elsewhere, and whether if this will generate findings that would help us in other locations, it might. Fall within the realm. We weren't necessarily thinking of the dollars going for implementation. The dollars are really targeted towards research, not implementation. There are other elements of the Rankings and Roadmaps program where the dollars have been available for certain implementation type activities. That's not really the intent of this particular call for proposals.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pramil Choyap. I'm calling from Pinnacle Health. I got a question. This grant is only to use for the county ranking, or let's say one of the ranking is about mental health days. Can we put a proposal together to look at the suicide, and looking at that, is that possible, or does it have to be linked to the county ranking?
It does need to be linked to the county health rankings, yes.
Okay.
It has to be something that will, one way or another, help us either strengthen or evaluate the county health rankings.
Okay, I see. And what is the total amount we can request? Is it $100,000 or $300,000?
$100,000.
That's the maximum?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
We have $300,000 available to award, but we do not intend to give that, most likely do not intend to give that just to one particular organization of the one study. That said, we reserve the right to do that if, you know, I mean, we don't, this is new for us, and we are looking for the most helpful research proposals that we can, so, but the I find it highly unlikely that we're going to want to put all our eggs into one basket, so we are saying the $100,000. I mean, well, there is a possibility this isn't a totally fixed process, and it might be if there's a proposal that came in for $100,000 and we thought it was super exciting, but we don't think it was doable for $100,000, we reserve the right actually to go back to the applicant and say, hey, we think you're onto something here, maybe we want to do this. So, but like I said, we're looking for the most helpful proposals that we can find with that, and so we're trying not to be too rigid, but we also but we only have the, you know, a relatively small pot of money to be able to distribute. We want to use that money wisely.
Okay.
Hi, this is Ami calling from UCLA. I had a question about you had mentioned earlier about having the two different factors, the health outcomes and the health factors as predictors, which is really important for communication purposes. Could you expand on that a little bit? I can see it be an opportunity for change, especially the predictors, but I'd love to hear more about what you're talking about just because we're thinking about the measurement piece.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So we, in our model, we have health outcomes. And we, when we're talking to the community about those, we talk about them as being how healthy a community is right now. Now, given that I'm talking to a lot of researchers, if you actually go look at the years of data that we're reflecting there, that's kind of stretching it a little because no data is that current. But the idea is that it gives the community an idea of, in general, how healthy they are. And we look at, within that, we look at both length of life and quality of life, and we have a set of five measures that look at those. In terms of the health factors, that we cover these four broad areas, and together, I mean, and the literature says this is not random, the selection of factors or measures that we include in there. These are ones that have been found to be associated with better health outcomes. And so we talk about those as being things that people can actually work on, and they are things that will help shape the future health of a community. So my point was that by separating out health outcomes and health factors, we can direct people to working to areas where they actually can do something to make a difference. I mean, we report on premature deaths in all communities, but just to, you know, to tell a community, oh, you've got high rate of premature death, isn't very helpful. The health factors really help to begin to explore what is it, what are the factors that are leading to those high rates of death, and we particularly try to steer people towards things that they actually can do something about. So some people ask us why we don't have, you know, in our model of health, why don't we have genetics in there? Well, you know, we could have a long discussion about whether or not genetics are modifiable, but, I mean, realistically, at this point at the population level, they are not, and so we do not include them. They're not something the community can set about working on, so we don't include them in the model.
Great. Thank you. Sammy, just as a follow-up to that, I really appreciate your perspective on that. In terms of data that are available, let's say, for some states versus others. I know you said that you wanted something that would then be applicable to all counties across the nation. You know, there's some states that actually collect more information than others. I mean, if we can demonstrate the need for that data and its value in then ranking and then actually translating into action, is that something that would be, you know, to demonstrate that would then be valuable to other states to collect that information? Is that something that would be of interest to you, or is the idea of more data collection down the road for others out of the question?
No, I mean, we're strong advocates for the collection of data that will be helpful. However, we're also pragmatists, and in the current climate of dwindling rather than expanding resources, we're a little hesitant in that regard to because we know, for example, that some states do an annual study of health behaviors. They do it every year with large sample sizes, much larger than the CDC funds through the BRFRS program. It's highly unlikely that all states would ever be able to invest, you know, that level of resources in it. So proposing doing, you know, taking that model to other states, it is sort of problematic. A proposal, however, that looked at working within the healthcare sector and thought about how we might be able to extract data from already existing efforts, such as, you know, in electronic health records or something like that, a proposal that, you know, addressed something like that would be of interest, because that would be making existing of data that's already being collected rather than requiring additional brand new sort of data, expanded data collection efforts.
Great, that's really helpful. Thank you.
Hello, this is Glenn Johnson from Lehman College, CUNY in New York. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I'm just wondering if you would be amenable to somebody proposing to do research to look at completely different methods for coming up with these scores instead of like a basic composite score based on coming up with the disease scores, like to use these data to evaluate totally different approaches. I mean, are you guys really like set on using the approach you use, or are you amenable to looking at totally different approaches using this data and maybe even comparing two different methods by looking at how well county rankings can even capture sub-county conditions for states where you have estimates of sub-county units of geography?
That's a good question. Within our team here at University of Wisconsin, we're probably split on this one. So you could submit a proposal for this, and some of the reviewers will be more supportive of it than others. So that's not an absolute no, but it won't necessarily get unanimous support.
Right.
One of the things that we are interested in all the time is being sure that we can explain our methods, and our methods currently, they have their flaws to them, but we don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And so, ranks themselves, we could have a whole debate about whether rank is the way to go, or whether or not, you know, we should be producing some kind of composite index, which would actually allow you to differentiate between, you know, one county than another versus just being able to say one's ranked number one and one's ranked number two. We're not gonna move off rankings. That's the we use rankings for a particular reason, to get attention, and we believe that we do at least meet that we do get attention with the rankings, and so, you know, we're not likely to deviate from that. Whether for specific, now we've got the other extreme, for specific measures and the way that we calculate some of those, and particularly around this issue with small cell size and how we deal with those issues, there we're definitely amenable to research that would help us figure out how to do that. But again, the method cannot be so complicated that those of us that spend a lot of our time talking to members of the media and community members, that, you know, that it's just so complicated that we can't explain it to anybody else, that, you know, we have to be able to be transparent about our methods, and transparent in a clear way that people understand. So.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. I mean, I actually have a list of several things that I'd like to do with this research, and it could be divided into methodology and applied. And so then my my only concern would be that I don't dilute my proposal too much. But I guess if I keep it down to, like, say, four or five discrete, clear objectives, and I present a strong case for what I want to do for each, and whether it's methodological or applied, then I'm assuming that that won't dilute my chances too much, as opposed to just picking one and really focusing on it.
No, and in fact, I think that if there is interest in for example, in your application, in your brief proposal, we might come back with some feedback and say, if you had five objectives in there, and we're really interested in numbers 1, 2, and 3, we're not so sure about 4 and 5, but, you know, we might give that kind of feedback. We're not necessarily going to give feedback on every brief proposal, but that might be something that we'd be willing to do, rather than you then, you know, having us rejecting yours because we weren't interested in 2 out of the 5 of them.
Yeah, right. Well, that's good. That's kind of what I was hoping to hear. Yeah, that if I, you know, say, like, about 4 different objectives, that, you know, because you're not interested in one of them, that it would kill it, you know, whereas you may be interested in some of the others.
Right. Yep.
Here in New York, I have a lot of, you know, zip code level data where, you know, I could even evaluate the, like, kind of like, say, the sensitivity and specificity of the county level rankings to capture those really high-risk zip codes that may otherwise get diluted in a county-level analysis. Just one example. In New York State, we have a good database for hospital discharge data, too, where just in the applied end of things, you know, just looking at preventable hospitalization, you know, that really somebody has proper outpatient care, could have avoided being admitted to a hospital, and to look at, you know, how well those avoidable hospitalizations correlate with the county health ranking. A couple of applied areas that, you know, kind of just using New York State as like a kind of a testing ground for seeing how well it correlates with certain outcomes. And there's that, and then there's, you know, like I mentioned before, there's methodological approaches too, where you first come up with an ultimate ranking, but maybe a totally different approach.
the one area that you will have a tough time swaying us on would be, for example, changing our model entirely.
Right. Okay.
That model has brought a lot of different people to the
is just one of our many locations available to serve
Someone's
you.
Someone's on hold.
Visit us for blood draws, pre-admission testing.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Anyway, as I was saying, our model has brought lots of different people to the table in communities across the nation. Well, I'm exaggerating here, but we know that there are places where the model has brought people from beyond healthcare and public health to the table because they see themselves in this model, and it seems to have a fair amount of resonance. And so we're going to be pretty, it'll be pretty difficult to shift us from the model in its entirety. I mean, maybe a tweak here and there, but not as a general approach, for example.
Right. I'd like to really, you know, stick with this, just composite score of B values. And I agree with you that the ability to be able to communicate and share that with people is really critical. Even if it's not statistically the best, it's still important for communication and transparency.
Right.
Instead of I'm a statistician, trust me, believe in my black box.
Yeah. I think the media, too, if they hit something that seems too sophisticated, they immediately go, oh, this is a black box. We can't, you know,
right.
We don't understand it.
Okay, so do we have questions from others?
Hi, my name is Nick McNeil from NEHI. We're a health policy think tank in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I had sort of a two-part question on expectations for grantees or sort of deliverables. Reading through that, it seems like one of the deliverables obviously is going to be the research itself, but also submissions to a journal for a paper, a white paper on quantitative and qualitative methods that were used in quarterly progress reports. So my two-part question is, first and foremost, for the white paper on quantitative and qualitative methods, could you talk a little bit more in detail about what you're particularly looking for in length? And also, the second question is, are there other main deliverables besides those four that I mentioned that we should be focusing on and thinking through before we submit?
Well, I will say one thing is, as a grantee where the funds are coming originally from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, a high emphasis is put on dissemination and communicating results and communicating them not just via scholarly mechanisms. And so being prepared to help draft press release and then respond to press inquiries should your research get that attention is going to be really important, and being so making yourself available for that is key to everything that we do.
Right.
In terms of the white paper, that really is going to depend on the nature of the particular research, and it's more just the way that, I mean, when you submit an article for scholarly publication, it doesn't necessarily have all the details in there to allow us to understand what actually was done, and so the white paper is just a way to give us supplemental detail. I don't think we'll necessarily put page limit, to us, short is always better than longer, but that doesn't mean that we want to be, missing important details. So
it's
more about, is there, enough information that we can glean to be able to implement it into the rankings. So.
That makes sense.
Other questions?
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Mark Smith. I'm with the Guilford County, North Carolina Health Department. My question has to do with the three research categories. Are you considering those as being mutually exclusive, or is it might be possible to combine or do a hybrid type of study that might look at, say, the impact of the rankings, but also include some quantitative analysis in that, possibly?
These are not mutually exclusive, and we're not necessarily going to fund one in each of the three areas, although we would like to fund more than one area. I would say in terms of trying to combine, just keep in mind the scope and the amount of funds isn't that great, and making it to be something that is actually doable with that amount of funds. Just don't bite off more than you can chew, I would say. If you think you can do this, then sure.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions?
Well, since there aren't any other questions, or if some questions come up, feel free to send those to me. This is Barb Rudolph again. And I want to thank you all for being on the call today. You asked very good questions, and we're really looking forward to reading these and having some great research come out of this call for proposals. So, as I said, we're going to be very transparent and let you know what's happening, and we will put up a summary of these questions up on our website. And other than that, we look forward to hearing from you and getting a new brief proposal. So thank you very much for attending. And as I say, if you have further questions, just give me an email and send me an email, and I'll try and get back to you as fast as I can.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thank you.